From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Donald Trump was inaugurated as the 45th President of the United States on Friday.
Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute.
The office of President of the United States.
The office of President of the United States.
And will, to the best of my ability.
And will, to the best of my ability.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
For more on that, we spoke with our regular political commentator, Professor Tony Montero, from Philadelphia via Skype shortly after the inauguration. Well, we have a new president, President Donald J. Trump. Who'd have thunk it?
Well, it is what in mathematical theory they call a singularity, a moment where things do not behave as expected and unpredictable things happen. And not only is his rise to the presidency something that was unpredicted and seen as really a wild, outlandish dream, but his inaugural speech today was as transgressive as his campaign was. He was actually talking about rebuilding the infrastructure, creating jobs, reinvesting in the nation. Now the question is how he goes about doing that. And that's the big issue before him and before all of us. How do you rebuild this nation as part and parcel of rebuilding the world? And I would say the tone of what he spoke about requires a peaceful world, a world not burdened by intervention and regime change and so-called nation building, and not burdened by belligerency and threats upon other nations, such as the current administration has left to him, this this belligerent approach to Russia with all of these NATO and primarily American troops on NATO's borders, on Russia's border. I'm sorry.
That's right. But it's NATO's border, too. It's NATO's border with Russia. You know, he talked about jobs. He talked about rebuilding the infrastructure in the United States.
Because if you remember, he begins with saying that the Washington politicians are a lot of talk, and they protect their own interest while the interests of the people go unprotected.
Right.
So he painted not only a critical attitude towards the Washington political establishment, but he painted a picture of them as literally in opposition to the people who they are supposed to serve. I thought that set the stage for a real battle, a fight between his presidency and most of the Washington politicians.
Yeah, absolutely. Not only that, I mean, he staked it out. I mean, I guess we could go all Siskel and Ebert on this, but I saw the same thing. And yet he said, today this ends. And then he talked about what he and the American people are going to do. He said, essentially, beginning today, the American people have this chair. In essence, that's what he said.
And that's right. That's right.
We're going to do these things.
Yes, which means that he is going to govern over the heads of the Washington establishment.
Yeah.
And this is going to be something unlike anything we've ever seen. He might begin uniting the nation behind positive goals of economic development, education, superstructure development in ways that this nation has not been united probably since the time of the civil rights movement. Now, it's hard to say. What he did say, however, is very significant, and it represents a radical departure from what presidents have said when they are inaugurated. And you're right. They usually refer to the nation in platitudes and act as though there are no real problems and that the Washington establishment exists to serve the people. Now, he said the opposite, that the nation is beset by domestic internal problems produced by an economy that has been in crisis now since 2008. And he is arguing that that crisis of jobs, of income, of a standard of living for the people, that that crisis continues to this day. Now, that's the opposite of what official Washington is saying. They're saying that we're now creating jobs, that incomes are rising, and so on and so forth. The other thing is that when he says America first, it is literally, and it has to be understood as a retreat from empire, from a military approach to solving the problems of the world. The other thing is a rejection of the multilateral trade agreements, such as TPP, such as NAFTA, and what he is calling for are bilateral relationships between nations, where the interest of each nation can be clearly defined, rather than submerging them under this broad multilateralism and these super complicated trade agreements, again, like the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Yeah, and what was interesting was the, he said essentially, rejecting imposing our way of life on anyone else and saying that people will want to adopt our way of life by the sheer force of its example, because we're going to do all these incredible things, and that was going to be the influence, and that he was going to focus, and that we're going to focus on rebuilding this country, and that right. is going to be an example to the world.
That's right. And you know, again, his assumptions are different than those of official Washington, and certainly of the Obama administration. The idea that we have a thriving nation or nation on the cusp of great prosperity, that all of the problems produced by the Great Recession of 2008 are about to be overcome because jobs are being created, wages are going up for the first time in many years. So he's saying the opposite. He's saying the people are suffering. And what he's saying is what I observe and what I experience as I go through the life world of a place like Philadelphia. I don't see any indication that real poverty is on the decline, or that people have good jobs, or that the infrastructure is better now than it was 10 years ago or 8 years ago. So I think that he is touching a very sensitive chord with the American people, especially the working class, and to govern. He will have to go to the working class directly. This is not going to be an administration where he delegates responsibility to cabinet, heads of cabinets and departments. What he is going to do, it seems to me, is go directly to the people and mobilize the people to put pressure on the Congress. And of course, in so doing, he becomes vulnerable to them, because then he has to deal with their concerns and their assessment of what he is doing and whether or not he is being successful.
You know, that's a sort of the meat part of a stew that includes his Twitter account being, you know, the object of so much scorn from the media, in that he's communicating via Twitter and other means, I guess, Facebook or whatever, with 50 million people directly.
Right.
Short statements, open to no interpretation. It's plain language stating, you know, plain things. And, of course, you know, the people that are in the business of interpreting reality don't have any room to interpret that. And there's a predictable outcry against that. That's what politically is seems like he was announcing today. And we've seen indications of that before. That's what Roosevelt did, by the way. He went right over Congress.
I agree with you. I agree with you. And you know, and this is the way he's going to have to govern. Now, whether this will be successful is a whole nother question.
Right.
But I think we're looking at possibilities that we have not seen in maybe 80 years. You know, I that's the way I see it. And I think that the left has to reassess its tactics. Is this the right-wing, war-mongering administration that they're claiming? Or is this something different and something new? And we have to think, how do we relate to this? A lot of people are of the opinion that Hillary would have been a better choice. I don't think so, not from what I observe today. I think the dangers, of course. I am not at all a supporter of Trump's cabinet choices. In fact, none of them. And I don't see where what he is saying today or what he has said on the campaign trail is reflected in these people that make up his administration. So I'm not at all happy about any of that, and that has to be confronted. But at the same time, what he is saying strikes a real deep chord in the souls of the working people of this country, who had been unheard and kicked to the side, and their conditions just got worse and worse, while politicians perform a kind of symbolic connection to them. I think this is a completely new type of personality occupying the White House.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, one of the problems with, one of the many problems with the political culture in the United States is that people conceptualize politics as being individual people. First of all, there's a face of this and a face of that, but actually even caricatures of that. This one is a segregationist, therefore he will do this as Attorney General. Here is a black woman, so now we can be sure that the rights of black people and the rights of women will be protected by the Justice Department. Well, the actual players, the actors, are much more malleable to the circumstances or the direction from the head or whatever it is, from those rigid characterizations of them, more caricatures of them. And so I think that's why we're going to see surprises no matter what he does, really.
That's right. And I think by going directly to the people, there's going to be a lot of pressure on these cabinet officials. I think he's once again shaking up the whole political system in the country in the same way that he did when he ran for the presidency, when he was running in the Republican primaries. He is shaking things up. And I think he is opening up space for the people to assert themselves and to, to assert themselves. Yes.
Yeah. And that's going to be an interesting experiment, of course.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yes.
But
yes,
I think,
yes.
Doesn't it lay before us, particularly those of us on the left, and really anyone who has any policy demands, doesn't it put before us the task of organizing to do exactly that? You're going to go over the head of Congress and come to me. Well, I'm ready to tell you what I want, and I've got all my people with me ready to make you do it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's what we're looking, a whole new political equation. And politics seemingly from the grassroots and from the masses of people, very much the politics that won him the presidency. And rather than abandon those politics, he seems to be committed to ratcheting those politics up. And this is quite
it's a new
unbelievable,
game.
Yes. You know?
It's a new game. This is different from everything we've seen.
That's right. That's right.
You know, I'm going to go back to this caricature because, for example, look at Nixon. Okay, Nixon was the penultimate Cold Warrior. As soon as he got his hands on the presidency, we had détente with Russia, opening to China, and the admission of China into the UN, which is, and when he was on his way to the White House, he was one of the people saying, get the U.S. out of the UN and the UN out of the U.S., and, China's, the government is in Taiwan, and they sold them down the river and all of that. He's the guy that did that.
Yes. It's a very uncertain time, but not in a negative way. There are many possibilities inherent in this situation.
Yeah, I think the meatiest possibility, it rests on this fact, this apparent fact. The elite is arrayed against him. The constituency that brought him to office is not enough for him to withstand a sustained attack by the elite and at least half the country, that he has to broaden his base, and that the people, the base that he's assembled so far, and those who are left out there, either don't trust him or don't trust politicians' word. They need some meat on their plate. It essentially sets up a condition where he has to produce some considerable amount of material benefit for a mass constituency or he's cooked.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Because, I mean, given what he did today, he has few, if any, allies in the Congress, in official official Washington.
Right.
He has very, very few allies. So he has to go directly to the people. That is his only option in this political situation. And I think he knows that, and I think that is the way he's going to attempt to govern. But it's going to be a hell of a move if he can pull it off.
Yeah, and not just that. He has to go to them, but the people he has to go to at this point are so desperate materially and so thoroughly fed up with being promised relief and not getting it that he has to give them relief or he's history.
That's right. I agree with that. I agree with that completely.
So
completely.
That again puts on the agenda. This is the guy who wants to negotiate. So let's sit down and negotiate. First, what are our demands?
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing, as you're alluding to, it seems that we are less close to war than we were
this morning.
The day before this inauguration, that we're less close to war than we were a week ago or a month ago, or if Hillary Clinton had been elected.
Yeah, I mean, in the past 3 days, the U.S. has bombed Libya and Syria.
Yes, absolutely.
So, and now, I guess that's not going to happen going forward. That was one of the campaign promises. There might be some cleanup ISIS action somewhere, jointly with Russia and perhaps even Syria and Iran. Because he even said we can work with any of them where we have a have common interests. And that's supposed to be, according to him, the universal threat is from ISIS.
Yeah. Which means that he's not playing the great power game of military competition and showing our military strength to Russia and to China. He seems to be pulling back from that and pursuing a tract of bilateral negotiation over economic issues rather than military ones. We'll see with China. It's obvious with Russia that that he wants to move forward in a completely different way. I'm certain that even if he doesn't overturn the Obama sanctions against Russia by executive order, they'll just not be enforced.
Right.
Because again, it's an executive order and not a law or a bill passed by the Congress.
Right. So that would there would be accompanying instructions to the Justice Department and or whoever would be charged with enforcement in that particular case.
Yes.
And
yes.
One of the other things that's that follows from this essentially, in terms of the response, in terms of what we should be doing. Involves identifying this agenda, but also if you're looking around the landscape and you're going to assemble a large enough mass grouping to be an effective lever, both as against Trump and also behind him as against Congress, you have to start thinking in terms of if you're going to push a working class agenda, class unity, and so you have to look for the most common policy objectives across the class, the strongest felt, the most important, and the most commonly held. And that's what we're supposed to be doing as left organizers, I think.
Right. Absolutely. Anybody that is has any partisanship towards working people and is concerned about their plight will be rushing to them and saying that we have to mobilize to force Trump to fight for those things that he said he was committed to in his inaugural speech. And we have to fight alongside of Trump against those in Congress who will attempt to undermine what he is saying. And I think this is a great opportunity for the working class as a whole. Now, I know there's going to be tremendous opposition to Trump just because he's not Hillary Clinton or because he's not a Democrat coming from the leaders of organized labor. But I think at the rank and file level and among workers who are not organized, what he represents is that opportunity for united action of the working class in the interest of a positive economic program for the future of the country.
And you mentioned that part of labor that isn't organized. That's a large majority of the working class, isn't it, these
days? That's right. 80%. 80% are unorganized.
Right.
And you know, so, and then even if you have a union, that doesn't mean that you have any real protection, right, or that your conditions of life will be any better. So unions are not only smaller, but significantly weaker, and a lack of leadership and a lack of leadership vision. So there has to be a grassroots and rank and file upsurge to take the unions back, but also to organize the unorganized, and to organize the unorganized and the organized alongside the poor and the masses of those who are hungry. So from the standpoint of the working class of this country, there's some great possibilities. And if left organizers, if progressive organizers go among working people, be they in large cities or in small and medium-sized cities and towns, like Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, like the small cities and towns in Indiana and Ohio and Michigan, go among the people and begin to organize, begin to do the work of political education. That is what the left has to do. Trump has, through, you know, this populist framework, created, I think, positive conditions for organizing in ways that we have not seen in a long time, and really forms of methods of organizing that we last saw during the time of the civil rights movement.
You know, and finally, this is the real kernel of it, I think, in that people will say that it's a waste of time because that's not what he intends. He intends this, that, and the other thing. But I think his intent has nothing to do with our task. Our task is to empower ourselves, to force him to do that which we want, and if he doesn't, to do it ourselves. It sets up the conditions for that.
Absolutely. And then on top of that, you know, the world capitalist system is in crisis. It's a big crisis. It's not a small thing. The U.S. economy is only showing sub 2% rates of growth. And I think it's somewhat below that, below 1.5% at times. So, you know, we're looking at a system in crisis. And the old neoliberal policies only exacerbate that crisis. The people know we're in crisis, whether or not official Washington or the academics or the politicians know it. The people know we're in crisis, and the people are crying out for solutions to this crisis. 60 million of them saw Donald Trump as speaking on behalf of them. And that's what is important. And it was a working class driven campaign. He went directly to the working class. How do you know that? Well, look at the issues, but the proof is in the pudding. Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, and Wisconsin, the Rust Belt. Two of those states, Republicans had not won in almost 30 years. So it was the working class that was at the root of this. And when he talked today about his loyalty to the people who got him to where he is, to the presidency, he was basically talking to the working people of the United States. And this fits into what he said about if he is in power for 4 to 5 years, he will turn the Republican Party into a workers' party. Now, we'll see if he can follow through on that.
Professor Montero, thank you very much.
Thank you, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.